produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit NORML.org. This will be close to the last show of 2007, and it has been a spectacular year for Normal and for Normal's Daily Audio Stash and our podcasting. You can link up to the hundreds of episodes and MP3s and interviews and event audio all up on the Normal Audio Stash archive at normalaudiostash.com. Today, we've got Normal board member George Raubacher. He put together the event in Denver in October and is a passionate speaker on the subject of marijuana law reform. Here's George Raubacher at a Safer Rally in Denver this year. We have links to download all of the Denver talks, including Alan St. Pierre, Mason Tavert, Geraldine Merritt, and Norm Stamper, on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
Louis Armstrong. Louis was probably the world's first true modern superstar, someone whose celebrity transcended racism in Rhodesia, racism in America, racism in our hearts. The joy that he projected in his music is probably unique to entertainment. And one of the sources of the joy is Louis Armstrong smoked pot every day. Virtually every time he performed, every time he recorded, that man was stoned. And imagine the success that Louis had in the era in which he played. Here we have this stoned-out black man in the world of Jim Crow, rising by talent and the sweetness of his personality to that level. Whoa. Louis Armstrong swore by pot as his medicine. He even talked about writing a book about pot. Louis smoked his reefer every day. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming. I'm George Raubacher. I'm a member of Normal's Board of Directors. And we're here in the second installation of a lecture series called Marijuana, the Unnecessary War. It's with great joy and pride that I stand before you tonight. I'm a DU alumni, class of 1970. DU is where, as a student, I first seriously studied marijuana. I transferred here from the University of Miami in 1968, in the fall of 1968. And at the University of Miami, I had been your typical beer-swilling college student. My roommates and I spent all of our available time and money building a 56-foot-long pop-top chain, one beer at a time. And for those of you who were born after pop-tops came off of cans, you know, actually when you find one out in the woods, it's an archaeological artifact. And with that, you know, 56-foot pop-top chain, I should be enshrined somewhere in the Coors Hall of Fame. But when I arrived at the University of Denver, society was changing. John Denver was singing about something Rocky Mountain High, which was sort of out of my experience prior to coming here. But very soon thereafter, I really got a very, very good look at what a Rocky Mountain High was. If you listen to the DEA, they're constantly talking about your father's marijuana, how the stuff today is so much stronger than your father's marijuana. Well, here in Denver in 1968, they had the best damn pot in the United States, as good as anything that's grown today. It wasn't until 2 or 3 years later that the what we called Mexican dirt weed showed up, that was, you know, one-third seeds, one-third stems, one-sixth dirt, and one-sixth pot. I think that's what the DEA is referring to. I never used any of that if I had any alternative. In fact, where Columbine and Skyline Hall used to be, and now some massive building, I don't even know what its name is, now resides in its place. We used to go in the bathroom, turn on the hot water, close the door, put a towel underneath the door, put on the vent, and smoke all the weed we could. I wouldn't recommend doing that today. I would recommend vaporizing. Much safer alternative. Anyway, several years ago, I became a member of the board of directors of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And it's the kind of organization that, you know, in fact, when we were driving into town today, or driving through Denver today, I saw a sign in some lady's apartment window in downtown that said, to protest is a patriotic act. Huh. You mean we're supposed to have different opinions in this society? That's kind of news. Anyway, NORML is the world's most well-known and oldest drug reform organization, and it's been around since 1971. The very first thing that NORML tried to do is we tried to get the DEA to reschedule marijuana from Schedule 1 with heroin and other such things to Schedule 3 or 4 or 5, which would allow for medical use. And NORML stayed with the process until 1988. It went through the bureaucratic chain of command until in 1988, an administrative law judge named Francis L. Young, who was the chief administrative law judge for the DEA, issued a ruling that found the DEA's scheduling of marijuana as a Schedule 1 drug was arbitrary and capricious, and that in his view, and this is in his findings, is that marijuana was, quote, the safest therapeutically active drug known to man. And I believe Measure 44 is kind of in that universe of thinking when it comes to marijuana. One of the things that's part of our culture is a phrase, holding these truths to be self-evident, that the pursuit of life, liberty, or the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is what Americans are about. In 1776, that was new news to the world. And it's new news to the world even today, to people in our government, that you should be working to preserve your life, to preserve your liberty, and also to pursue happiness. I don't know that any other government in the world has ever been founded on the concept that individuals are supposed to try to find happiness in this world. And when you go back to those traditions and try to figure out, you know, how did we end up here today? When you look at NORML to some people seems radical and subversive, but NORML is actually part of a long, substantive tradition in America that was started by one of our founding fathers. I don't know if you remember the guy, Ben Franklin, the guy that invented the wood stove, bifocal glasses, the fire department, the University of Pennsylvania, the lightning rod. One of the most incredible things, along with his political activities, in fact, Ben Franklin was the only American to sign the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Treaty of Paris that ended the Revolutionary War with Britain. The only person to sign all three documents. But as important as that, one of Ben's most amazing inventions, which is really probably hardly anyone knows about, he invented the service organization. When he was about 35 years old, he and a bunch of buddies got together and formed a club called Junto, and they met once a week. And the purpose of the organization was to talk about the community and figure out what can we do as active citizens to make our community better. For thousands of years, there had been all kinds of guilds and societies for literature and science and whatnot that were all about promoting something that the people involved with were interested in, something that benefited them commercially, physically, or academically. What Ben invented was a unique idea to the world, the idea that we should get together and talk about Colorado or Denver or wherever we happen to be and ask each other, well, what's wrong with it? What can we do about it? Have you heard anything from outside the community that we might use here? And so the activities done today by Rotary International, the Kiwanis Club, any one of the breast foundation or breast cancer foundations, and Normal, they all grow from the same rootstock. There are a lot of organizations in the in drug reform today. In 1971, there were none. Until Normal came around. And Normal is a collection of several thousand members, 130 local chapters, close to 400 lawyers who network and as they work their cases. In fact, it's actually an interesting idea to have an association of lawyers who are trying to work themselves out of a job. I don't know any other lawyers in America who are trying to end their employment. So how did we get here? In America, as I said, Louis was one of 18 million Americans arrested for marijuana. Starting as you go back to the Nixon days, 17.5 million of those Americans are from Dick Nixon to today. From the early part of the 20th century, starting in some locales in the 20s and 30s, but really being capped off in 1937 when the passage of the Marijuana Tax Act happened. In fact, 3 days after the Marijuana Tax Act happened, the very first person to ever be arrested in America on a federal marijuana charge was right here in good old Denver, Colorado. A man named Samuel R. Caldwell, a 57-year-old farmer, in fact, just the same age I am today, got arrested for four joints 3 days after the passage of this act. Harry Anslinger, the drug czar at the time, took a train out to Colorado to shepherd this guy through hell. He got arrested Wednesday night for selling four joints. He was arraigned on Thursday, and on Friday he was sentenced to 4 years in Leavenworth. He did not survive the sentence. He didn't die in jail. They let him out to die outside. So 18 million Americans, 17.5 million since Dick Nixon's days. Virtually all of them are still alive today. You know, you hear numbers all the time. How do you get your brain around a number like that? 18 million people. I was trying to figure out how to explain 18 million in a more cogent term. If you arrested every man, woman, and child in our fourth largest state, Florida, that's 18 million. If you arrested every man, woman, and child in the four largest cities in the United States, that's 18 million. All of you have been in line to go to a concert or a movie. You know how long a line of 18 million people is? 10,000 miles long. That's how many human beings we're talking about. I mentioned Harry Anslinger a minute ago. He was a retreaded prohibition guy who became America's first drug czar. And in 1937, when the Marijuana Tax Act was passed, it just showed up on the congressional docket one day with no advertisement. There was one person who testified in favor of it, Harry Anslinger. There was one person who testified against it, the lobbyist for the American Medical Association. And let me read you three sentences from the congressional record. This is how we started into this problem. This is Harry Anslinger selling Congress on marijuana prohibition. Quote, "There are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the U.S., and most are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana usage." Well, he was right there. "This marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and any others. As racist a crap as you'll ever find in the congressional record." And what's interesting, looking at the heritage of marijuana prohibition, it's as racist today in its application as it was back in its inception legislatively. One awful statistic is there are more black males in prison today than there are in college. In France, there's about 70 people per 100,000 in jail. In America, it's 700 and some. But for black males, out of 100,000, 6,900. That's 7% of the black males are in jail today, let alone the ones that got out last week, or the ones that are under arraignment right now. Well, Harry Anslinger's plan went from the federal government down to the states. And one of the reasons Colorado no doubt has the law that it has, and I haven't done the research to know this exactly, is Harry went on a national campaign to make sure every locale, every municipality, every state had something to stop this scourge. And then he went out, after he got America done, then he went out after the rest of the world and through the convention at The Hague and the United Nations, got that job pretty well done. And Harry had this lifelong thing for this entertainment scum. From 1943, in the midst of the Second World War, when the outcome was not yet certain, from 1943 to 1948, Harry Anslinger and, I don't even know what it was called back then, but just call it the DEA because that's what it is today. Bureau of Narcotics, yes. They maintained round-the-clock surveillance on Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, Milton Berle, Les Brown, Cab Calloway, Jimmy Dorsey, Duke Ellington, Dizzy Gillespie, Jackie Gleason, Benny Goodman, Lionel Hampton, Andre Castellanos, Kate Smith, and the entire NBC orchestra. And that's not the whole list. And in 1947, he sent out a note to all of the people that worked for him, said, get your files up to date. We're going to have a sweep, and we're going to sweep the entire United States and pick up all these pot-smoking scum at the same time. Luckily, his boss, who is the Assistant Secretary of Treasury, said no. And unless you go to the archives, you don't know that that's part of the federal program. About 2 weeks ago, There was an editorial in the Rocky Mountain News about Amendment 44, and when I read it, I was kind of amazed at what a string of platitudes of tired old sawhorses this editorial was, and I'd like to just speak to three of the points in this editorial that just fry me. Number one, in the editorial, they say marijuana is not safer than booze. What the heck? What have they been drinking? Friday's Wall Street Journal says 85,000 Americans die every year from alcoholism. Do you know how many Americans die from potaholism? None. Zero. Nada. Niente. One of the many things that I do, I farm in eastern Washington State, and I'm a former member of the Washington State Legislature, but I've done a lot of agricultural consulting in various parts of the world, and I've spent many, many, many weeks in the former Soviet Union. And I saw a statistic in The Economist magazine about 6 months ago that the alcohol consumption in Russia is virtually the same per capita as it is in England. Alcohol consumption is higher in England than it is here, but Russia and England are almost identical in terms of liters per capita. The difference in Russia, because of their poverty, is they're binge drinkers over there. Once they get some money, they go out and hammer it on, where in England, you just go, you know, have 6 or 10 pints every night. Well, in terms of the Rocky Mountain News and their idea that alcohol is just as safe as pot, in Russia, every year, 30,000 Russians die of alcohol poisoning. We're not talking about die of the consequences of alcoholism. We're talking about poisoned to death. I've got 4 kids, all of whom have just recently been through college, and I've watched as a parent as they, well, not so much they, but their roommates, especially when they're freshmen, are like dogs let off the leash for the first time. And there's not a college administrator in America that doesn't sweat the first couple of months of every fall quarter, because that's when alcohol comas, alcohol toxicity with dead students happens. And in fact, one question, and unfortunately I haven't been able to get a good answer for this, but one question that every college student should know the answer to is, when you're hugging the bowl, barfing your guts out, how close are you at that moment to a lethal dose of alcohol? Are you halfway there? 3/4 of the way there? Something that's new from the time that I was in college, it's called boot and rally. You guys familiar with that? Blow lunch and then start drinking again? I don't think that's very wise, but, you know, and the reason after a night out drinking that you wake up with a headache and your mouth tastes like Barnum and Bailey's circus walk through your teeth, it's not because of some puritanical deal. You went out and had too much fun, now you're paying for it. No, you went out and had a lot of fun, and you poisoned yourself. And this is the consequence. And you can poison yourself to death. 30,000 Russians do it every year. Okay. So that's point number one that rubbed my further wrong direction with the Rocky Mountain News' editorial. The second one that really, you hear it all the time. This is the wrong message to send children. The wrong message to send children. Well, one of my children's in the office, in the audience tonight. Laura, are you here? What kind of message should we send children? The truth. Novel. Well, one of the truths about alcohol toxicity, when you look at Well, in fact, you look at all the intoxicating drugs. In fact, one of the best books ever written on the subject by Dr. Andrew Wild, a guy that looks like Mr. Natural in Zap Comics, or maybe that's beyond your era, a couple gray-haired guys laughed at that one. he wrote a book called From Chocolate to Morphine, and it looks at probably 60 or 70 different substances that give you a buzz of some kind or another. And in fact, one of the things about trying to talk about this is we as a society have a language that's constantly evolving. When I arrived here as a student in the mid-60s, the word camping meant you got a sleeping bag and some bacon and a frying pan and you went up to the mountains. And now the word camping means you hook onto something that weighs 3 tons that has a microwave and a satellite receiver, and that's in the word camping. They've done the same thing with the word drugs. You know, to take alcohol out of the word drugs is absolutely fallacious. Most of the usable drugs, most of the psychoactive drugs, for example, heroin, cocaine, they all have a ratio of the psychoactive dose to the lethal dose. Heroin's about maybe 4 or 5 to 1, depending on how strong the heroin is. It's close to that with cocaine. You move out to alcohol, and it's probably about 20 to 25 to 1. That's the LD50, lethal dose 50. If you have 100 people, it kills 50 at that dose. Well, experimentally, they've spent millions of dollars trying to find the LD50 for marijuana. They have yet to kill a lab rat. And let me tell you, they have tried. The theoretical LD50 of marijuana is 20,000 to 1. And that's probably if you took that amount of marijuana and dropped it on the subject from the second story window. Okay. The last point from the Rocky Mountain News editorial that's totally wrong is they said that Colorado shouldn't be the guinea pig, to try something radical like what these safer folks, this Amendment 44, want. Guinea pigs. Well, when I was smoking pot here in the 60s, I would say I was a guinea pig at that stage. You know, America had really never really heard of this stuff before in a larger context. Well, the experiment's over. I survived, as did millions and millions of my compadres. And I actually like to think of Colorado as peopled by not guinea pigs, but pioneers. Colorado has a historic opportunity on November 7th to do something that changes the course of the way we do business in America. Guinea pig hell! It's time to be a pioneer!
That was Normal board member George Raubacher speaking in Denver this October to Safer supporters. You can download George's complete talk, as well as the talks Alan St. Pierre, Geraldine Merritt, Norm Stamper, and Mason Tvert gave at the same event. Just visit our website at normalaudio-.com.
From Washington, D.C., the belly of the anti-marijuana beast. Season's greetings from Normal staff and the board of directors. To you and yours, this is Alan St. Pierre, executive director of Normal and the Normal Foundation. And I sincerely hope your holidays are both safe and hemp-filled.
Hi, this is Normal founder and legal counsel Keith Strop, wishing you a happy holiday from Normal. Let's use this time with family and friends to rededicate ourselves to ending marijuana prohibition and stopping the arrest of responsible marijuana smokers. Happy holidays.
This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.